Hi, this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
I'm Bob Love of the Chicago Bulls, and you listen to Freddie.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. We have the great Kevin Anderson from NBC Sports Chicago on the line. How you doing, brother?
You're too kind, Fred. You're too kind. Great is probably an overstatement. Maybe marginally above average, maybe.
Well, we'll run with it. Let's see what the listeners say. I think they'll disagree. They really enjoy listening to your insight, and so do I. So I can't thank you enough for coming on Denzel Valentine Day. Happy Denzel Valentine Day.
Yeah, happy when will we see Denzel play again day. I mean, that's the question. I mean, it stinks that he's going to be out the entire year because I know you feel the same way, that he would have been a heavy part of the rotation for this team, and you know, but that's life. You know, hopefully he can rehab, and I think the boot came off recently, so that's a good sign, and hopefully he's 100% by training camp next year.
Well, that ankle injury took away large swaths of his season as a rookie. I think it bothered him on and off his second year. So in the grand scheme of things, this is probably the best thing for his career going forward, that he takes a year off, gets it fixed. Like, I think Taj had the exact same injury. So, and he was able to come back. So hopefully he'll be able to come back and continue on his hot streak of shooting well from three and being an active member of the rotation. So let's get to the beloved Bull, the status quo. A lot of topics to talk about today. Let's start out with the first one. Which I want to discuss was Chris Dunn. Obviously, now I think most people are kind of off the island on Chris Dunn. What say you on Chris Dunn? And in addition, what are your options, potential options, if you feel like he isn't the answer as the point guard? What do you feel about free agency, potential free agents in the offseason?
I was optimistic about Dunn going into this year. You know, like I felt like if you would ask me in September, even October, you know, what's Chris Dunn's ceiling? I would have said Dunn's ceiling at that time was still a viable starting point guard on a playoff caliber team. You know, I don't think he'll ever be a top 10 point guard in the league, but, you know, I think a viable starting point guard, a top 15 point guard. I don't know if that's the case anymore. I just, you know, Dunn, because of a multitude of things, including injuries, has been very inconsistent this year. He's had career-high assist games and looked fantastic, and he's also had awful games in which his shooting is horrendous and he's still making careless turnovers. I think right now Chris Dunn's ceiling is a viable defensive-oriented backup point guard on a high playoff caliber team. I think that's where his best role is. I don't think his best role is as a starting point guard. So I'm kind of off the island in terms of, if you want to call Dunn your point guard of the future, I don't think he is. He hasn't shown me enough this year to prove that he can be that guy. And his perimeter shooting is still horrendous. I don't know if you can go into today's NBA with a point guard who cannot score in front of the perimeter. Mm-hmm. You just can't do it, you know. And his assist to turnover numbers aren't eye-popping, right? Like, so mm-hmm. If he was going in there and he was averaging 8 assists and under 2 turnovers a game, I could live with the scoring not being there. But he's not. He's averaging 2.5 turnovers a game. That's really not acceptable for a guy with his usage rate and is only giving you 6.5 assists a game. You know, like, if you look at the league leaders in turnovers per game, they're guys who are high usage rates guys. Like, James Harden's leading the league in turnovers a game. But clearly, Harden gives you so much more than assist, which he still is nearly 8 per game, and it's certainly his scoring. You know, Westbrook's right behind him at 4.5 turnovers per game, but Westbrook is giving you a triple-double every night. He could certainly do a lot of things. Chris Dunn is not doing any of those things. And so, to me, Dunn is elite on defense and mediocre running the point and below mediocre to below average as far as scoring is concerned. So, I think there's a place for Dunn in this league, and I think he can still have a great career and be a Patrick Beverley-type player where he comes in and plays lockdown defense on the perimeter. But I think that's where his ceiling is right now.
Interesting. And I kind of agree with you. I mean, I still believe he shows signs like he did against Indiana. I was at the UC for that game, and you know, I thought it was awe-inspiring how well he played that game. And you know, he has talent, physical talent, and he's a great defender, but it's just not shown enough.
The inconsistencies there.
Exactly. He's just too inconsistent. My point is, if we bring in a good free agent point guard, who knows, maybe he'll rise to the occasion and feel like he's being pushed and maybe really embrace all of that potential and fulfill all that potential. But it's not, we got to bring in somebody to challenge him. You know,
You know what, that is a wonderful point, Fred, because so much of competition among athletes, it's not always about who's playing opposite you in a game, right? It's not about, like, the Magic Bird rivalry. The Magic's going to get better because he's playing Bird twice a year. I mean, that's a nice storyline for the NBA. But the reality is competition on a team is more important than competition between teams.
I agree.
And you need to have a player who is going to challenge Dunn for his minutes. And that, quite frankly, hasn't happened in the last 2 years.
Agreed, 100%. Yeah, there's been a huge, delta between him and who's ever backing him up, and we need to erase that delta in the offseason.
Right. I mean, as good as Archie was, in the season, the first half of the season finale, if you will, against Memphis, the consistency from Archie and Payne and anyone else you want to throw in there, Shaq, the competition is not there. Dunn is clearly the best point guard on this team. And they need to bring somebody else in to challenge Dunn, that if Dunn loses his starting spot or is going in danger of losing his starting spot in training camp, does that kind of compel him to become better and make smarter decisions? You know, I don't know the answer to that, but it certainly is a better idea than what they've been doing.
Agreed. To that end, who are some of the free agent potential acquisitions at the point guard position that you like that will be available this upcoming offseason? And if you give us your rankings of those.
Sure. So, number one, you got to be realistic about who you're targeting, right? Like, you can't go, I want Kyrie Irving and Kemba Walker as my one and two. Because of the Otto Porter trade, the Bulls, number one, don't have a max slot available for someone of Kemba or Kyrie's stature.
Mm-hmm.
But number two is they were unlikely to get those guys anyway, which is why they made the trade in the first place. And, you know, we could talk about that later. But to answer your question, realistic targets for the Bulls this offseason of free agency at point guard. Number one, I like Darren Collison. Mm-hmm. You know, Collison is a veteran point guard who is a pretty effective scorer from the perimeter. Shooting over 40% is just about 40% for his career. Shot nearly 47% and led the league last year. Is below that this year, but is very good. His turnover numbers are pretty good. His assist numbers aren't great, but they're quality. And I think given that the Bulls will probably have about $19 to $20 million in cap space this summer to spend, and Collison is a guy that fits within that mold. I don't think I'd give him $20 million a year, but Collison is a guy I would target and certainly take a really close look at for the Bulls. Number two is fan favorite Derrick Rose and Kendall Gill's champion, Derrick Rose. I actually think Rose would actually be a good fit on the Bulls next year, and I think the two sides could probably get past the baggage and the history. It's my understanding that Rose is open to returning to the Bulls, and we'll see if the Bulls front office is open to having him return. But Rose is a guy who we all know his resurgence he's had in Minnesota. But he's a guy I think will come in and I think would be your starting point guard next year. I think he would push Dunn to the bench immediately. And Rose has turned into a very good perimeter shooter. And he's having a career year this year from deep. And so he's shooting 40%, and that's what you want from a point guard. You want a guy who can score. Rose's turnover numbers are low, which I love. Much like Collison, his assist numbers aren't eye-popping, but with this team, you don't need a ball-dominant point guard, a Rondo-esque point guard, to come in and take over and need the ball to be effective. You need someone who's going to come in and can work in the flow of the offense, because, quite frankly, in order for Zach LaVine to be effective, he needs to have the ball in his hand a lot. Now, I've had some people suggest to me that why don't we make Zach LaVine the point guard? I don't think that's a good idea. I do think that to be effective, you do need LaVine to be handling the ball, not all the time, but certainly he's got to have the ball in his hands to make things happen, especially if you want to run the high screen and roll with him and Laurie, which I would pound all day. But I think if you made Zach the primary ball handler, he's a little bit too sloppy with the ball. I think you would start to see Zach's turnover numbers creep up to 5 and 6 per game, and I don't think Zach necessarily makes everyone around him better and would be a great facilitator. He does have good court vision and does make good passes, but at the same time, I think you would lessen the best part of Zach LaVine, which is his elite scoring, and I think it would put too much on him to make him the point guard. I think if you have a combo backcourt, if you bring in a Rose or a Collison, I think they would complement LaVine really well, which I think is the entire point of what they need to do. Dunn doesn't seem to complement LaVine very well. And that's part of the frustration of watching Dunn play, is Dunn at times can have really high assist games like the Indiana game. He can have times in which he is aggressive, but for a guy like Dunn, he doesn't get to the free throw line, which is also kind of odd about a guy of his size and his ability. You would think he'd be getting to the free throw line 6 times a game, but he doesn't. Mm-hmm. But back to the other option, I love Patrick Beverley, but he's not someone you would bring in as a starting point guard. He's essentially done with more miles on him. He's got that veteran presence, and I think as much of anything on this team, this team needs some veterans. I mean, last night, Laurie Markkanen was joking about how Otto Porter has come in and is now the veteran leader on this team. Otto Porter is 25. Yeah. Zach LaVine is 23, and they're the veteran presence on this team outside of Rolo. And so, you need to bring in someone that is going to police the locker room and just teach good habits. And I think Patrick Beverley is that type, but I don't want Patrick Beverley to be my starting point guard next year. I would actually, for my third option, take a look at Rubio. Rubio is known as a ball-dominant, pass-first point guard. He has gotten better from three. He's not great, but he's slightly above average. He's kind of improved himself over the years as a shooter. But Rubio, quite frankly, is just a couple notches ahead of Dunn. I'd take Rubio at the right price, but I certainly wouldn't overpay at all for Rubio. I would really look at Collison and Rose as my two primary guys that I'd be targeting in free agency for the Bulls, with giving Patrick Beverley a really close look as a veteran leader.
Really interesting. So I had a question about Rose, because I love Derrick Rose. I'm sure you remember, I was bringing this up before the season, bringing him back. What a great story. Of course, I thought we'd be winning a title next year, and it would be an incredible story. But, I would counter that. I think Dunn, I agree with you that Dunn doesn't complement LaVine offensively, but defensively he does, because he's so good defensively. He can guard any two. And I really think you need a guy next to LaVine who's good defensively. And I don't think Rose is there, right? He's not a good defender.
No, you're absolutely right about that. Oh. But at the same time, because of the Otto Porter trade, so if we were talking about our wings and our point guard being Dunn, LaVine, and Jabari, right? That's what the wings going into the year were going to be, right? Then you're absolutely right. You can't have a point guard who's below average or just average defensively with those two guys at your wings. But Otto Porter is a plus defensive player. He's a very good defensive player.
Absolutely.
And the addition of him, to me, then takes away the necessity of having a plus defensive player at point guard, because Porter is then tasked with guarding the other team's best guard/forward, right? And so with that, I'm okay with keep. I mean, by no means do I want to like trade Dunn or get rid of him. He's under a very good team friendly contract. You got to have him for another year.
Agreed.
And you keep him on this roster, but you also treat him like most teams have treated Patrick Beverley, which is he is one of your first guys off the bench who is your ball stopper. If you need a stop, he's a guy you bring in. He's going to give you really good defensive minutes. I don't think with Porter that you need Dunn in that role starting. I think it's more beneficial for the offense, for the team, to have a guy who's more of a plus offensively and maybe not as good defensively.
Great. Very great points. And I agree with your other point. You know, we got to bring in some good quality veterans. I love it. Like a Taj Gibson or someone who could come in and be a rotation player but still provide a little bit more outgoing leadership. We had Holiday. Holiday's a quiet guy, just sits in his hotel room, plays guitar. And Rolo's a good guy, but he seems a little bit more subdued, I'd also say, too, you know.
Yeah, and Rolo's not coming back, you know. They're not bringing Rolo back. And, you know, what's interesting, if you look at this team right now, like with let's say everyone is healthy. The healthy starting five right now on this team is Wendell Carter, It's Lauri Markkanen, it's Otto Porter, it's Zach LaVine, and it's Chris Dunn. Like, that's a pretty decent starting five.
Absolutely.
You know? Like, that's not a top four worst team in the league starting five. Like, that's actually, to me, a playoff caliber starting five. The issue with this team all year long, besides the injuries, is depth. Like, their bench, for the most part, is the Windy City Bulls just brought up and playing at the United Center. And so that's the biggest thing they have to address this offseason. Like, it's about that veteran presence and that depth. Like, you need your sixth and seventh and eighth guys in the rotation to be quality NBA players. They can't be guys who would be two-way players. They can't be guys who would be on the inactive list on most playoff teams.
Agreed 100%. They had depth at the four, but that was the problem. Their best six and seven guys were all power forwards in Parker and Portis.
Yeah, they had depth. They're bigs. They had depth at the bigs. Before the trade, you know, Jabari, who I consider a four.
Yes. Yes.
Bobby, certainly a healthy Rolo and a healthy Carter. Like, your bigs aren't the issue. It's your wing depth and your point guard depth.
100% agree. I want to go a little bit off script because I want to go back to Otto Porter trade, which you were the first guy who I saw on Twitter proposed this, I mean, way back in, what, November, October?
Late November, I think. I threw it out there that this is what. I think when after the Bulls, the way they started, and it was clear that they weren't going to be a playoff team, I think you and I actually talked a few months ago, like about a month into the season, and, you know, about their start, and I said they were going to be 5-25 to start the season. And that was, you know, turned out to be pretty accurate. But, I was beating the Otto Porter drum because I felt like the Bulls needed to be realistic about their salary cap situation and their status as a free agent destination, right? Because, you know, they were, prior to the Porter trade, going to go into this offseason with 40 to $42 million in cap space, which is more than enough to get a max guy and another really good rotation player. But the issue is that so many teams in this league are going to have cap space this summer that there is no reason that a high-quality, max-level player would consider coming to the Bulls and their situation ahead of a dozen other teams in the league. And so I felt like at that time, and certainly it turned out to be what the front office felt like too, is that it made more sense for them to trade for a guy you'd be signing in free agency. And so, like, I Mark Schanowski, who as early as, a day before the trade, had Tobias Harris as his top target in free agency. And Tobias Harris is a very good player. We see the impact he's having on the Sixers.
Yes.
You know, after that trade, Tobias Harris is a really good player. But Tobias Harris is going to be a max contract player this summer. And so, would you want to give Tobias Harris a four-year contract at $28 million plus per year, or would you rather have Otto Porter under 2 years of that same contract? And to me, I'd rather have Otto Porter under that contract. Otto Porter, to me, is actually better than Tobias Harris. He's better defensively.
No doubt.
Maybe not as good offensively, but, you know, maybe we're starting to see that people are underrating Otto Porter as an offensive player. And it looks like that he was maybe just caught in the wrong system with the Wizards, playing under two ball-dominant players like John Wall and Bradley Beal, and maybe he just needed a change of scenery to bust out offensively. And that certainly looks like it's the case. He certainly has been really efficient with his shooting here with the Bulls.
Yeah, with the Bulls, before the season, I felt it was a viable option to go after the big free agents because I thought they were going to kind of replicate what they did in 2005, where an exciting young team with Ben Gordon, Luol Deng, and Kirk Heinrich on the rise, you know, gets to the playoffs, impresses, you know, some veterans, and then they signed the number one free agent in the offseason, Ben Wallace. Now, that didn't work out great. I mean, Ben Wallace absolutely improved the team in that first year, and he kind of fit a need on as an interior defender. I thought that's what they're going to try to do, is replicate that by showing the league, hey, here's a young, exciting team, around 40, 41 wins. We're only one guy away. Why don't you step in, and we'll hit the ground running, cooking with gas. All that ended when the injuries galore started the year, and you start out like that, nobody's going to come to a team this bad. So
no,
this was a great – And when you tweeted that, I really started thinking about it and started calling. I used to work in D.C., and I have a ton of people who are season ticket holders, a ton of friends, and people involved with the Wizards. And I just kept on hearing over and over again, nobody in this organization wants to trade Otto Porter Jr. We know how good he is. But we're paying Ian Mahimi and John Wall next year about $54 million to do what? You know, we're in cap hell. We can't afford to have Otto Porter Jr. at $27 million a year. So I think you're absolutely right. I agree with you. And I would also counter, too, like Tobias Harris. I love Tobias, but I think he's more of a four. And he kind of tends a little bit more to a four than a three to me, where I think Otto Porter Jr. is a pure three. He's a pure small forward who can, in today's game, you know, play the four, play the two, wherever you want, even center. But great call on your part for that.
Yeah, and here's the other thing about Porter. Not only certainly his skill set, but he filled the number one position of need this Bulls team had, was a small forward that can play plus defense.
Yeah.
Like, that was the biggest hole on this team. And so he also is a very good perimeter shooter and clearly a very good scorer. And so get that he's overpaid. I get that he's probably getting $10 million more than he should. But at the same time, you've got a bunch of other players under rookie deals for this team. And it's not like trading for Porter means, well, you're going to miss out on Kevin Durant now, right?
Right.
You know, they're not going to go after Durant because they got Otto Porter. You're not getting Durant anyway. You weren't getting a max free agent. Anybody you think you maybe were going to get on, like Tobias Harris or Chris Middleton, you were going to have to overpay to have those players come here. And so, like, it was just the front office being realistic about this situation, where this team is, and I think it was the right move. And, like, the thing is, you go into this offseason now, and you can address the true need on this team, which is, we just talked about, point guard and depth.
Yeah, and he's a great fit. Like, I'd even counter, too, like, some people I was going back and forth on Twitter, do you think Kemba Walker on a four-year max deal is really going to make this team great? Or better than necessarily Otto Porter could, and a couple smart signings. Like, I don't think he's a great fit either. You got Zach LaVine and Kemba Walker as your backcourt. How is that going to be good defensively? It's going to be really rough. Would you have preferred that they go after like a second, what I call like a second tier max free agent like Kemba Walker? Do you think that's
No, I wouldn't have. And the reason being is, and we're starting to see it over these last few weeks, and that's with Lauri Markkanen.
Yep.
Markkanen is, we're now seeing the player we saw at the end of last year. Like, he even as much as Wednesday night said that he is still recovering from his elbow injury that had him miss the first 2 months of the season. He's still recovering from that. And he's been playing for 2 months now. And so, like, he's not 100%. But at the same time, like, we're seeing him be more aggressive. We're seeing him score more. We're seeing him as a very good passer. To me, most importantly, we're seeing him develop chemistry with Zach LaVine that are your two guys that you want to move forward for and say, you know, we can really build around. And Zach and Lauri complement each other really well. And had you brought in Kemba Walker, Kemba Walker's a great player. He's a great scorer. He's a shoot-first point guard. I think that would have stunted the growth of Laurie, and I think it would have certainly negatively impacted what we've been getting from Zach LaVine this year. Now, would he have made them better? Absolutely. But at the same time, you would still have a huge need at small forward, and you wouldn't have addressed your huge glaring issue of defensive wing. Between the two, I'd rather have Otto Porter than Kemba Walker on a four-year max deal.
Agree, 100%. On to the next question, and this has to do with the Knicks. And a good friend of mine, Caden, in Shy Sports Nation, wrote an article. I just want to give you a quick quote from that article. The Knicks gave up Kristaps Porzingis, their one valuable asset, to acquire a player who they could have just drafted the prior year to clear cap space for the chance at signing two superstars in free agency. Last time they went out to acquire a superstar, they got Amari Stoudemire. Look how that turned out. Now, why are the Bulls in a better position, you may ask, as we have quite the dysfunction in the front office? So, you know, I kind of countered this too. Like, what have the Knicks done to deserve all of a sudden this reputation in Chicago that they're in a better situation than we are? And I've argued with Chris Black on this and a couple of my other friends on Twitter. Do you really believe the Knicks are in a better situation or better destination right now than Chicago Bulls? I'd like to get your input on that.
They believe it. The Knicks believe it, right? Like, you don't trade Kristaps for pennies on the dollar just to clear cap space unless you believe that you're getting two top-tier guys, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's one of two things. Either they already know that they're getting two top-tier guys through back channels and through tampering/non-tampering ways.
Yeah.
Or they are so confident in their brand and so confident in being New York as a destination that they are completely gambling and going all in. And now it could work. Like, we could be sitting here on July 5th and they're introducing Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, or Kevin Durant and Jimmy Butler as their two guys. And then if you take those two players and add them to, you know, the couple of the young players like Dennis Smith they have and Knox, then yeah, they're probably going to be a playoff team. I don't know if they'd be a title team, but certainly they'd be a playoff team. But what if they strike out?
Yeah.
Like, what if they go into free agency and it's historically how it's been? Like, the thing is, like, there's this idea that the Bulls are not a free agent destination and they always get passed up. Name me a top-tier guy who's gone to the Knicks in the last 20 years, right? Are we talking, like, you know, Amari was good, but he wasn't a top guy.
He was at Boozer level. He was at Boozer level. He was in that
same class.
He was.
You're right. And we're talking, like, Amari and Allen Houston.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, you know, the Knicks historically haven't gotten LeBron James. They haven't gotten Kevin Durant. They haven't gotten Dwayne Wade or even Chris Bosh or, you know, any of the other top guys that they've been going after. But, you know, certainly Carmelo didn't work out for him. They wanted Carmelo, and you know, that turned out to be a good decision by Melo to stay there. So, you know, to me, it is a situation with the Knicks in which they're going all in on free agency, and good luck to them. How many playoff series have they won in the last 30 years? It's not a lot. But to answer your question, I don't see the Knicks situation being better than the Bulls situation.
I agree. So I'm going to just throw out three combinations, the three most likely I believe to happen.
Okay.
And let's say they sign, and then I want you to say, do you think the Bulls are more likely to win a title in the next 5 years or the Knicks? Okay, and let's assume that both teams finish out of the top three in the lottery, just for argument's sake.
Okay, so we're not talking Zion is in the situation.
Zion's out. Yep,
okay.
Yep, exactly. So let's start out with this one. Kyrie and Butler, Jimmy Butler, they signed both those guys at around 30 years old for four-year deals.
Do they win a championship? What?
What situation would you rather walk into? The Bulls going into next year with Wendell Carter Jr., Lauri Markkanen, Otto Porter Jr., Zach LaVine, Dunn, and whatever free agent point guard we bring in, or the Knicks with, you know, Butler, Kyrie, and what? Knox? You know.
So this is with both teams finishing out of the top four in lottery, right?
Yes, yes.
Let's assume out of the top three. Oof, that's tough. I would say for the long term, the Bulls have a better situation, and if I'm a GM or a coach, I'd rather coach the Bulls. But if we're looking at 1 year, even 2 years, probably the Knicks.
Yeah, I agree with your assessment, but I don't think Kyrie and Butler are getting out of the East. I don't think that's better than the Celtics for the next 2 years. Well, they're losing Kyrie, I guess. I mean, there's a lot. Is it better than the Sixers? I don't think so.
No, they're not. Or the Celtics, certainly.
And those guys aren't exactly, haven't been the picture of health, let's put it mildly, in Butler and Kyrie over the past few years. It's a dangerous waters, let's put it that way. But I think that's pretty close. I think we both agree Kyrie and Durant, which I think is another possibility, is better than the Bulls. Would you agree?
Yes, I agree. I mean, the thing is, Durant on any team is a... I mean, Durant's level, and the thing is, on Golden State, Durant, Curry, and Clay kind of make all the other two like seem not as good, right? Because they're not putting up eye-popping numbers or like what they could do if they were just one on another team. But yeah. Durant is a Hall of Fame player. He's one of the top three players in this league. And so you put Durant on the Knicks, and then if you add any like top-tier guy with him, whether it's Jimmy or Kyrie, and that's going to make the Knicks a viable contender. I don't know if they're necessarily the better than the Sixers or Boston in that situation. I think for them to be at that level, they would have to have Zion in that mix, because if you're just adding Nasa Little or Cam Reddish to that team, they're still really good. But I don't think they're ahead of Philly or Boston or maybe even Toronto, depending on if they re-sign Kawhi. So they're still good. I mean, they're in the playoffs, and I put them ahead of the Bulls short term in that situation if they get Durant. I mean, Durant's an all-world player. Yes. Every team in the league would love to have him.
Absolutely. I'd absolutely take Kyrie and Durant over what the Bulls have right now, no doubt. That's the only combo I think is a slam dunk. The last two combos I did want to discuss, Kemba and Jimmy Butler. Let's assume they sign those two. I'd rather have the Bulls. What say you?
I would, too. I agree. I'd rather, if you're talking about Knicks without a top three pick, and it's Kemba and Jimmy, I don't think that team's that good. Like, that to me is a fringe playoff team. I'd much rather long-term have the Bulls. I mean, would for that next season, would they be better than the Bulls? Probably. But I think age would catch up really quick to both those guys, and I think the Bulls would start to overtake them and eventually in the long term be the more consistent winner.
And here's what I think is their most likely ending: Boogie Cousins and Jimmy Butler.
Wow.
That's a mess indeed. That's a mess indeed.
That's a mess for a lot of reasons, you know. And yeah. if that's who they sign, if that's what happens this offseason, then the Kristaps trade was a mistake. And, you know, I think what Dallas is doing, I mean, Kristaps healthy with Doncic, I mean, they are going to be a powerhouse as long as they can keep Kristaps healthy and on that roster long term. I mean, you talk about what's a free agent destination. A free agent destination is a team that has two established stars and then a max slot for a third star to slide in.
Yes.
That's a free agent destination. That's what the Mavericks are building. That's certainly what the Bulls hope they are building. If you talk about Wendell Carter and Lauri Markkanen, and then hopefully a Zion Williamson this June.
Yep. Last one. I can't thank you enough for your time, Kevin. You've been great today, and I didn't give you a little prep on this because I purposely wanted your initial opinion. What comes to your head?
I don't like the prep, Fred. You know, okay. Like it's all like usually. Like I know everybody when they go on talk shows likes to have the topics ahead of time. I like to be more surprised by it, because if it's about the Bulls, I don't need any prep time. You know, if you want to ask me about the Clippers' seventh guy off the bench and their rotation, then yeah, I might need some research on that. But if it's about the Bulls, you just ask away.
Right. So, you know, I feel really, as an aside, I feel like we need to get in the top four. That's my dream. You know, as long as we get in the top four, I think the sky is the limit. You know, Zion would be awesome, but I do like a couple of the other players. You know, I've identified four that I'd love to see on this team. But there's a team right now in L.A., of course, the Lakers, that if the season ended today would also be in the lottery. And I had a nightmare the other evening that they won the number one overall pick in the lottery.
Yeah.
So let's say you're the GM of the Lakers and you win the number one overall pick. What do you do? Are you trading that number one overall pick, Zion, for Davis? Or are you holding on to that, which I think is the correct move going forward?
So that's a really tough question. It comes down to, and we know that the Pelicans are not happy with the Lakers right now, right?
Right.
Like the Lakers reportedly made their godfather offer of literally the entire team but LeBron and a couple first-round draft picks, and the Pelicans said, yeah, we'll pass. No, thank you. I think that changes certainly if they land the number one overall pick. It depends on what else the Pelicans are asking for in addition to that pick, mm-hmm. right? So if it's Zion, Ambal, and either Kuzma or Ingram, I probably do that deal, but you don't do it for all four. I think that's too much if you're essentially trading their three core players and Zion for AD. I think that's an overpay, even with AD committing to an extension. But I'd still take the known quantity of Anthony Davis. And the known quantity of Anthony Davis, he's still, like, getting better. AD is the best big in the league, and he's still getting better. And with apologies to the Sixers and Joel Embiid, I'd have rather have Anthony Davis than Embiid. And so if you can get a top five player, right, certainly the top player at his position who could do everything and who's still got a long career ahead of him in his prime and still getting better, you do that. If it's for the known quantity of that and the unknown of Zion, even as high I am, you know, as everyone is on Zion, and Zion is just
he's awesome.
So much fun to watch. I mean, yeah, he's absolutely awesome. Amazing. But he's still unknown. You don't know how he's going to develop his perimeter shot. You don't know how he's truly going to fit in the league. I trade Zion. I trade Pry. Of those three, I want to keep Kuzma. I think Kuzma's got, like, the best upside. So if I'm the Lakers, my best offer is Zion, it's Ingram, and it's Ball for Anthony Davis. And I tell the Pelicans, take it or leave it.
I
make that deal.
Kev, from the Pelicans' perspective, if I was the Lakers and I win the number one overall pick, I'd call them and say, I'll give you the number one overall pick, and that's it. I honestly would. And from the Pelicans' perspective, I think I'd take it. Like, what's going to beat
that?
What's going to beat that? I guess the only thing I could beat
Danny
that is...
Well, Danny Ainge might have a few things to say about what's going to beat that, because...
Tatum?
Like, the thing is, Zion does have star power, right? And he is... Desperately, what the Pelicans need is they don't need draft picks to replace AD, right? They need star players. They need rotational, solid starter, all-star level players. But in that situation, I think Danny Ainge gives them a better offer. Even if AD says, you know what, I'm not going to re-sign in Boston, like he's publicly, through his agent, have said, I still think Danny Ainge comes up with a better offer than just Zion.
And what would that be?
I think that probably includes multiple picks, and it includes.
It's got to include Tatum.
I don't know. Like, that's the question. Does it include Tatum? That's tough, and that's the question Ainge is going to have to answer himself. Am I willing to give up Tatum for that? And I know they're really high on Tatum there, and I've seen flashes of Tatum that makes me think that he is going to be a second team All NBA guy. That'd be hard to do for a year rental. Like, that'd be really hard to do. Like, I don't think I could do it. I don't think I could trade Tatum for one year of AD. I know championships is what you want to have, and that would put them as probably the front runner, even ahead of Golden State, if they make that trade for that one year. But you make that deal, and AD gets hurt, and, like, what happens? Like, you set your team back for several years.
Yeah. So thanks for coming on, Kevin. I want all the listeners, too, to email me, because I'm fascinated to hear what everyone will say. Like, would you, if you're the Pelicans, from the Pelicans' perspective, would you trade Anthony Davis, knowing that he's going this offseason, would you trade him for the number one overall pick, or would you prefer to take the Celtics with anything they have to offer but Tatum? See, I don't think they have enough, if Tatum's not included, to beat Zion Williamson. I just don't. I think Zion is so far superior to any combination of assets, because all those number one picks, they're mid to late first rounders. That in weak drafts, that's nothing. You know, that's as bad as a second round pick in some drafts. You know what I mean? I think the only argument they could have is Tatum. Tatum over Zion Williamson is a good argument. But we'll see, man. We'll see. Great stuff, though, Kev. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. By the way, I'm going to give you a little plug. And normally I would plug NBCSportsChicago.com, which I kind of am in a roundabout way. Mm-hmm. But coming up next week, Monday or Tuesday after the All-Star game, we're going to have C-Red Fred's Top 5 Underrated Bulls column that he wrote for us and is very, very good. And I've already read it. It's excellent.
Thank
so
you.
I'm looking forward to having everyone else read it. But your top five underrated Bulls of all time.
Although it's only since, to be clear, it's the Jordan era. So the last 35
years.
Oh, no,
that's right. The Jordan era. So yeah. Since the Jordan era. So it's basically in the last 30 years.
35 years. Right, exactly. Yeah. I would say, I mean, because Chet Walker's a guy I absolutely would have put on there. I think he's very underrated. But, I'm looking forward to – thanks for mentioning that, Kev, because I'm looking forward to – talking about that as much as possible. I think it's going to get a lot of feedback, especially within the halls of Bulls outsiders. I think Alana's going to enjoy it, and I think Matt Peck's head will probably explode.
Oh, my God. How much? My favorite part, so John Sabine's been on his honeymoon this week,
yeah.
And Alana Tahauer, who is a Chicago native but also a big Heat fan, has filled in for John, and Alana is a massive Dwayne Wade fan. And so my favorite part of the two shows, these two games this week they've done, is when Big Dave just breaks out in laughter hysterics watching Matt and Alana argue about Dwayne Wade. So it's really funny, and it's if you want to catch the show, it's on NBC Sports Chicago's Facebook page if you want to relive it. We also have the Bulls Outsiders podcast available on Stitcher, Google, Spotify as well, if you want to listen to the show that way. So I highly recommend it, because it's funny when the two of them go at it about Dwayne Wade.
Oh, it is.
And I think one of your, correct me if I'm wrong, but is Taj Gibson one of your honorable mentions or no?
I didn't, because I feel like Taj is so beloved, he's not underrated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think he's properly rated among the fan base.
I would love to see Taj. It's funny. I would love to see the Bulls sign Joaquin, Taj, and Derrick Rose in the offseason, right?
Awesome.
It would just tug at my heartstrings. And from a veteran standpoint, I actually think those three guys would be really good with the young players on this team.
Agree 100%. I think that's a great idea. I'm down. Let Rolo go. I mean, they could do it probably with the cap space they have. So.
Oh, absolutely they could do it. They absolutely could do that.
Kev, you've been awesome as usual, man. Great stuff. One of these days, I'd like to. I got to figure out where Peck is going, in the evening, because I'm going to call Lana. We're going to both attack him and with Wade arguments, because I got a ton. I thought Wade was very, very good for the Bulls, but I know I'm on Wade Island there. So all right,
a little sneak peek at your underrated Bulls column.
Take it easy, man. Good talking to you, Kev. All right,
thank
man.
You, Fred.
Have a great weekend, and happy Denzel Valentine Day to you.
Absolutely.
All right, man. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Thanks, buddy.